notice how the best advice usually comes from someone who actually does this stuff for a living? That's the idea behind Pet Talk, also known as the Pensacola Expert Panel, weekdays at 9.
Good morning, this is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg.
Meg sits down with local business owners and professionals to talk real solutions, real experience, and real-life questions. Pet Talk with Meg,
weekdays 9 to 11.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, informative,
local,
dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Items. We have several action items tonight to work on. The first one is to authorize our Rotellus financial consultants to look at the fire rescue assessment study for if we're going to decide to do that in December.
This is the City of Gulf Breeze City Council meeting from about 2 weeks ago. I believe that's Mayor J.B. Schluter. I still have not learned everybody's voices. I can't watch the video because there's no video. It's just the audio, but audio is better than nothing. In any case, the fire assessment fee being contemplated, not being put into place. This is important to understand. It is not being put into place. It is just being, you know, they've taken the first step toward maybe eventually having it, I think is probably the most accurate way to say it. So you had the police chief, Jim Custer, talking about what this would mean for the city of Gulf Breeze.
Fund the fire department.
Oh, I have my marker set in the wrong place. How about this version?
What we're asking tonight is to engage Rafdellis to conduct a study. As y'all know, over the recent times, we've been looking at ways to handle funding based on changes they're making at the state level. And in the budget workshop, as we discussed, the ways to maintain the combination department that we have set forward in the staffing, and in order to ensure that we're getting adequate coverage, we were wanting to engage this study as a way to set up a fire assessment fee that would possibly fund the fire department.
So, like I said, this is really a step one. I think part of this conversation is born out of the concern that the property tax amendment is going to pass. But there's also something that even sort of before that became a thing, there was the concern or the recognition that, you know, fire, like law enforcement, is the kind of thing that in an ideal world, it would be known how much the cost is. People would see it. You know, there's a transparency in government movement, in my opinion, at least in some local governments, that is healthy. Like, you know, what Santa Rosa County did last year, where they created the MSTU, the Municipal Services Taxing Unit, for the sheriff, the two mills, if I remember correctly. Anyway, sorry, I sometimes, you know, digging deep on memory, but where the sheriff's funding, which is not all of the sheriff's funding, but would be, you know, that's the bulk of it, and that's the idea, is that you would be able to see on your tax bill, oh, you know, okay, I'm paying $2,000, let's say, in property taxes on my house, and I see that, you know, 800 of that is going to the sheriff, or 600 of that is going to it. I guess by ratio, it'd be more like, doing the quick math, more like 500 or 600, something like that, about a third of it. And you'd see, oh, okay, that's paying for, you know, a jail and law enforcement, which is good. And then this piece, you know, maybe you'd break out a piece that would be for EMS. You'd be like, okay, so I pay $150 a month to make it possible to have an ambulance service. Or in what they're looking at here is for fire. You know, look, I pay $200. Because, you know, some people in their districts already have something like this. Escambia County has made a similar move for different reasons recently where, you know, the concern was losing money into fire, and so wanting to, you know, make sure that it gets funded properly, but also an effort to make sure that you see where your money goes. And in my opinion, that's a good thing. I think My theory, you tell me if you think I'm wrong, 437-1620. My theory is most people do not really understand local budgeting. And when I say it's my theory and, you know, tell me if you think I'm wrong, I think everybody knows that's just plain true. Nobody, even people who are pretty good at numbers, don't really understand local budgeting. And it's really hard to understand budgets. And so what happens is you just kind of look at the bill and you fine, you know, because, you know, by law, you have to pay it. And yet that means that you don't really know how much of your property tax bill goes to, you know, stormwater maintenance or maintaining storm drains and, you know, paving roads and having fire service, and how much of it goes for, you know, the discretionary funds in Escambia County for the commissioners, or the, what are they, the support, I forget the name of it now. But you get my point, is it would be a kind of interesting thing if on your tax bill you could actually see the broad strokes budgets, and you realize that, because you know what it is for the library, you know what it is for the schools broadly speaking. Maybe within the school budget, it'd be kind of nice to see, like, okay, my tax bill for the school is $1,000. But of that, $400 goes to salary, $200 goes to facilities. I don't know, $14 goes to football. I don't know how, you know, obviously it's not going to be that detailed. It's got to fit on a page you can understand. But wouldn't it be interesting if, and then you might have a conversation among candidates for office who said, look, I think that the amount of money that we're spending on law enforcement is too low or too high. I think that the fire ought to be higher or lower. And then you could actually see it fluctuate. And it would give you a sense of ownership of what's going on in your local government, which, again, for transparency's sake, for being informed, for comparing candidates, I'll go you one step further, which is, I know this is never going to happen. But I have always thought, or for a long time, I don't know, always, you know, since I was 14. Anyway, I have long thought that at the federal level, when you did your taxes, same thing. It'd be kind of nice to see, you know, what share of your taxes are going to what things. I know they don't itemize it, but if it just had an maybe the front of the tax, the instructions could have it. But what if on your federal taxes, and of course, I'm imagining, what if on your property tax bill, you could have this same thing. But what if on your federal taxes, you got to spend, I don't know, 10% of your taxes on whatever priorities were important to you? It's not feasible to make it much more than that. It might not be feasible to make it that. But what if you had, 10 options? And your 10 options were national parks, Coast Guard, you know, military budget, schools, scientific research, art. I mean, who knows? You know, what if you had it doesn't even have to be that much. It's almost, it could be nearly symbolic, but in such a way that if you aggregated everybody's national income tax forms together, and, well, this year we've got an extra $100 billion to spend on art. I think that would be interesting, because it would make people feel like they have some control. It would make people feel like they have some ownership. If you did the breakout like I'm talking about locally, it would be a chance for people to see what their money actually does and to feel some responsibility for it. Because right now, you know what it feels like when you pay your taxes right now? Is it just goes into the black hole. I just threw a bunch of money in the fireplace as far as I'm concerned. Because you don't know what it does. Not really. I mean, you know vaguely that it kind of makes it possible to be at war with Iran, and it kind of vaguely makes it possible for you to go to the Gulf Islands National Seashore. And, you know, when you're driving on an I-10, I guess some of my money goes to that, although some of it comes from the gas tax and some, you know, like, we don't really understand how our behaviors and our money are connected to government functions, and I think it's better if we were. And if in that process you give individuals a little bit of direct democracy, not that direct democracy is the great answer for everything, it is not, but a little bit, you know, just a little bit of ownership, so that kind of like how when you give to charity, you get to decide, do I want to support wildlife restoration? Do I want to support poverty relief for families? Do I want to support helping abused girls? You know, where do I want to give my charitable giving? Well, in government, you're required to give X amount. What if you had a little bit of control over where it went? I just think it's interesting as an idea. So back to the discussion going on in Gulf Breeze. Sorry for the long meander. I know. It was... I know what you're going to say, Charles. I know before you say it.
It was more of a monologue than a soliloquy as well. Thank you.
Fine. Yes, it sure was. In any case, they're talking about creating something where you have more clarity about where how much fire costs and also more clarity about how much you're paying in because it would be a special assessment that would be separated from property taxes.
Some key notes to make with this. What you're doing tonight is basically buying information. You're not committing to anything. You will get the study. I've been told that y'all are very familiar with Raftalis. Such a hard time saying that name.
It is a weird name.
But you've engaged them on other studies in the past, and so you're familiar with their work. They're going to come back and tell you what can be done, what can't be done, the kind of funding that we can expect, and that way you can make the decisions that you need to make. But once you have that information, you're not committed to anything. It's just getting the information you need in order to make an informed decision.
So the way this thing is structured is it's $49,800, so it's $50,000, but just under. And no, in case you're wondering, well, is that just to take advantage of the city manager's ability to spend money? No, because Sam Abel has brought this before the entire board. That's not it. Okay. Everybody wants to think weird things. Okay. But what this does is it buys you a package, the end result of which would be a recommendation for, you know, I could even have several recommendations like options, A, B, C, D, but a recommendation option list for implementing a fire service fee in Gulf Breeze to fund fire, to know what fire costs really, to know what things might be done differently or the same is my read of this. You currently have two career firefighters, the chief and 49, or maybe that includes the chief, and 49 volunteers. It's kind of a hybrid system. Would we have more full-time, you know, professional so-called? Would we have fewer? What would be involved? You know, what's a recommendation for all of this? You know, and which, by the way, City of Gulf Breeze has improved their fire service. Their rating is now a 3, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's right. Anyway, so this is part one of a multi-part strategy, and there's a time frame involved because you have to have public notice. You can only do things so quickly, so this would be for 2027 to 2028 if they wound up implementing it. Raftalis is going to run the study and kind of come back with recommendations. And this is the most important part of this. This is actually the part of this I think is really neat because that $50,000 is not $50,000 up front. The $50,000 is an up to and no more than amount, and you pay as you go. So if we do step one and they start to do some work and the initial bill is $5,000 and the initial report comes back to the board and the board's like, oh, no, we're not doing this. You know, you saved $45,000. You just stop. So it's a really interesting way to approach a really interesting question of to what degree should your taxes be used. And again, if the property tax amendment passes, that also doesn't go into effect all that quickly. It's the next year, 150, the year after that, 250. This is meant for 2027, 2028, which is that following year as well. So anyway, we'll talk about this a little bit more. But I know the City of Gulf Breeze is doing something that I think is interesting. I think it probably makes sense. You actually had Ed Gray, of all people. I'm not going to go into the background. You know or you don't know. Ed Gray, of all people, came up and said, I don't think you should do this because it gives the look like you're trying to work around the property tax amendment. And they still voted. I mean, I don't know that he's wrong exactly in that assessment. But anyway, they voted to pass it unanimously. So step one, which is kind of the beginning of the process. 5:23 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, we got an interesting note yesterday. This is not a story I had covered much. And I'll tell you the simple reason why is because I really hate reporting on he said, she said, they said stories where it's hard to know where the truth is. And this looked a lot like that. It was a DCF story where, you know, basically children taken away from parents or a parent in this case over, you know, inappropriate behavior, allegations that DCF had done wrong. And this has been a news story brewing for, at least 6 months, maybe more like a year now. Well, yesterday you had a joint statement from several Florida senators, Jennifer Bradley, Don Gates, Aaron Grawl, Jason Pizzo. Those are Democrats, Independents, Republicans. That's a lot. And basically saying DCF has real problems. The letter said, the report contains a damning litany of failures and 34 recommendations for change. There's a grand jury report out. And so there are issues at DCF. Reform is coming. Don Gates says he's going to do a press conference on Friday about this. So for those of you that have kind of been paying attention to that story, this is kind of major news on, you know, getting reforms in at DCF. I have always had it's a really weird blend of things. Child and Family Services, or which always goes by a little bit different name in every state. Here, Division of Child and Families, Children and Families. On the one hand, they are protecting vulnerable kids, and that is incredibly important work because, as the news story about these parents alleged to have been neglecting and abusing their kid shows, I mean, there were really bad parents, really, really bad parents, and you got to solve that problem for the kids, for the protection of the kids. On the other hand, if you give a group of people the power to interfere in the lives of families and parents, that will lead to abuses. And good parents will be have their rights violated, privacy rights will be violated. The, you know, people who don't understand how things are done, historically, religious families have had concerns about this with regards to homeschool because it has been a problem historically. And so how do you balance the need to protect kids against the absolute reality of anybody given the power to protect kids, there are going to be some cases where they violate that trust and use it to harm kids and parents. That's a challenge. And apparently in the case of DCF right now, it's erring in the wrong direction. So they're going to work on it. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hear that? That's Alka-Seltzer, the sound of fast heartburn relief. Because when heartburn hits, you want something that works fast. Quick, Alka-Seltzer. Alka-Seltzer effervescent tablets start neutralizing stomach acid in seconds, so nothing works faster for heartburn relief. Next time, when that burning feeling comes on strong, don't wait. Quick, Alka-Seltzer. Try Alka-Seltzer. Use as directed.
Daniels looking, now thinking about running, flush to the right side, fires into the end zone, it's caught! It's Sweet Feet! Daniel Singleton Jr., touchdown!
Florida State faces nationally ranked SMU in an early season ACC matchup on Monday night. Primetime Labor Day coverage on the Seminole Sports Network.
FSU takes on SMU Monday at 6:30 p.m. Brought to you by Pensacola Hardware and DeFranco Gas on News Radio 92.3.
The future of cornhole is here. From casual backyard games to professional ACL tournaments, the Cornhole app is your all-in-one hub for the game you love. Keep score, track stats, follow your favorite players, and manage leagues and tournaments with powerful event tools. Whether you're a brand new player or an ACL pro, the Cornhole app connects you to the entire Cornhole community. Download the Cornhole app today.
Keeping you connected to Pensacola and the world.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Yes?
Can you see Daffy Duck's face with his beak sideways aiming towards Bugs Bunny and his hand up with the challenging gesture? Oh, Rabbit Seasoning is one of my very favorite episodes of Looney Tunes ever. It's a classic. 528 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. James Uthmeyer is having calls against him for impeachment by Democrats. So, you know, one would imagine it's not likely to go anywhere if, for example, even trying to create a law last year that would have required side disbursements of any payments coming back to the state to be approved by, you know, the legislature and the oversight bodies, that passed in the House overwhelmingly, and I don't think quite unanimously. It was like one vote negative. I forget. It's something like that. Anyway, and then the Senate just decided, we don't care about all this. This is as a result of the Hope Florida Foundation Centene scandal. And, you know, largely because the Senate historically has done more aligning with the governor, and the governor was no on a lot of this stuff because it's his former chief of staff and now attorney general. Well, now the grand jury report that had been leaked that contains basically confirmation of all the things that Alex Andrade and, you know, all the reporting has been saying about this deal, except that the grand jury said, we just don't think we can get a conviction because it's not clear exactly who made which decision. So it's short of being able to bring a case. But, I mean, the facts are exactly what we thought they were. Well, now the Democrats are like, well, if this is true, I mean, you have law breaking and, you know, this guy shouldn't be the attorney general. Yeah. But what's going to happen? Nothing. I mean, nothing. The Republicans are not going to do anything about this. I would not imagine. I'd be very surprised. But it does come in an election year. Then again, you know, is it going to actually percolate out to voters? Is it going to make a difference? Would you be, you know, if you think that Uthmeyer should be removed or should resign, you know, who's your replacement? You know, would you rather have the Democrat in there? Again, these are kind of, this is largely like, you know, 2 a.m. coffee shop speculation comments. It's not going to actually make a difference. At least I would be very, very, very surprised to find out that it actually makes a difference because, you know, though I am a naive optimist, I'm also a realist. The Army is spending about $500 million on what they call Group 3 killer anti-drone laser systems that mount on the tops of, it's not actually on Humvees, but on that kind of a vehicle. That'll take out even the big Class 3 Shahed, that's not the biggest, but those drones from Iran at a huge distance and even drone swarm. So if this works the way it's supposed to, great news.
Fox News, I'm Gian Gelosi. The jury in Lindsey Clancy's murder trial going to resume deliberations for a sixth day. Yesterday, Judge William Sullivan gave them a Tui Rodriguez charge. It's a final warning before a possible mistrial.
It instructs the jurors to reconsider their positions and listen carefully to each other. Jurors are reminded another jury may not be better equipped to handle this case, and they're encouraged to reach a unanimous verdict without giving up any honestly held beliefs.
That's Fox's Nate Foy. President Trump says the U.S. is ready to attack Iran at any time, but also signals that renewed campaign against Tehran likely won't last long.
Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says the recent strikes were limited. President Trump indicates Iran was trying to rebuild their radar and missile systems and deploy rockets that would have launched mines in the Strait of Hormuz.
It's Fox's Madeline Rivera. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne, and right now we've got 76 degrees with mostly clear skies here across the area. We'll get a full look at our forecast from Channel 3. That's up in just a few minutes. Well, this week, President Trump nominated Acting Navy Secretary Hung Cao for the permanent role following former Secretary John Phelan's departure earlier this year amid tension over shipbuilding priorities. Northwest Florida Congressman Jimmy Petrona says he's known Cao for more than 15 years since Cao served as commander at the Navy dive school.
Here he is. He's a refugee with he and his family from Vietnam, had to basically be placed in Guam until a sponsor family could bring him to the United States, and gets here, ends up becoming a Naval Academy graduate. And then has led unbelievable missions, whether it be the recovery of John F. Kennedy Jr. or the Egypt Air flight.
And Petronas called Cao a typical American success story and an incredible servant leader. Well, if state lawmakers take up flock camera legislation, PPD Chief Eric Winstrom says he's got an idea of what he'd like to ask for.
I know I can watch the officers in Pensacola, I can hold them accountable, et cetera, but I don't know when an officer in Albuquerque punches in a license plate because I'm looking for a murderer. Are you really looking for a murderer? I have no idea. You know, there's how many thousands of agencies across the country. So I can only hold my own officers accountable. So some legislation which really puts teeth in that.
Winstrom also said he'd support shortening how long license plate data is retained, saying most of the tool's value comes within the first hour or two after it's collected anyway. PPD has suspended use of flock cameras after FDOT ordered ALPR cameras removed from state roads by the end of the month. Winstrom says he got no pushback from Mayor D.C. Reeves on that decision. Well, new charges have been added against the two Flomaton parents arrested yesterday after their child was hospitalized in critical condition this week. Eric McClure and Cynthia Tedder now face attempted murder charges along with torture and willful abuse. Police say other children were also found living in the home and are now in the care of Alabama's Department of Human Resources. A neighbor tells Channel 3 that he'd long been concerned about the children's living conditions, describing roaches in the home and children who often appeared unclean. McClure and Tedder are being held without bond, awaiting extradition to Alabama. It is 5:34, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will have a small 30% chance of some pop-up showers today. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, high near 91 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 74. For Friday, 80% chance of rain, high near 89. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Heading into Saturday, 70% chance of your showers and thunderstorms, high near 92. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Clear skies right now, 76 degrees. Your next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime it happens. This is News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Google shares entered September on a fourth-month losing streak, the longest since 2015. CNBC reports that the company is leaning on the launch of Gemini 3.8 Flash to show that its AI services continue to advance. Alphabet's ad business also got a boost from a key antitrust ruling. Microsoft will begin reporting Azure revenue in dollars for the first time, providing more clarity about its business that competes with Amazon Web Services. CNBC reports that CEO Satya Nadella wrote in a presentation that, quote, under this reporting structure, Azure becomes more purely our consumption-based platform and infrastructure business. Snowflake shares rose 22% after the data analytics software maker reported results and guidance that surpassed expectations. Snowflake's revenue jumped 35% year over year in the fiscal second quarter. The company pointed to growth in its artificial intelligence coding agent named Coco. Futures are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR can help you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Hi, I'm Darren Costello, owner of Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, Fine Wine and Cheese.
I'm Dr. Ben McMillan with the Neal Clinic.
What do these businesses have in common? They've trusted our years of marketing experience at ADX Communications.
I absolutely recommend radio to business owners. It's real, it's local, and it reaches people where they live and work. Radio helps us build trust and name recognition with patients before they ever walk through our doors.
We're proud of the successes our local business partners have had, trusting our years of marketing experience.
I enjoy working with such a great team with the radio station. Dependable, professional, local, and results-driven. ADX Communications.
To have your business become part of our success story, no matter if it's Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, Sports Radio Pensacola 99.1, Pensacola's Playlist 94.5, or the area's most robust digital platform, call us today, 850-262-6000. That's 850-262-6000. And let ADX go to work for you.
You don't always have time to sit and listen.
That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
This is going to be a little bit unusual because typically when we talk to anybody from PPD, we talk to them on Thursday, but Mayor DC Reeves is out this week. And so I thought, well, you know, this license plate reader, the ALPR announcement from yesterday is such big news and pressing that I thought we'd go ahead and have the chief on today. I want to remind you this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy, Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. So joining us now by phone, we have Eric Winstrom. He is the chief of the Pensacola Police. Chief, welcome back to the show, sir. Good to have you.
Good morning, Andrew. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So I know we have a lot to talk about, but let's just start with this. Tell me how the decision got made from Monday when FDOT tells everybody that they're going to take away the permission to have flock ALPRs in the Florida state right-of-ways to yesterday, the decision by all the local agencies to completely flip the switch off.
Well, I can't speak to the other local agencies. I did touch Sheriff Simmons about it before our mutual decisions. But I know you've always been sort of a 55-45 guy against, and I've been on the other side. I see the value of it. But I'll tell you from my own personal point of view, what got me hearing the governor specifically mention COVID was the thing that really had me thinking deeply about my own experiences, really in Chicago, which had a very vast experience from a police department point of view, and that's what pushed me over to the 5149. You know, I think I don't have to tell you how valuable a law enforcement tool it is. How I think the argument from the socialists, or you know, any defund or abolish, they're just trying to tear the country down so they can rebuild it in whatever they're trying to rebuild. So I think it's very insincere, but the COVID argument plays to what we talked about last time of what if this power gets in the hands of a truly bad actor. And I'll give you an example from the Chicago days. In the end of May in 2020, the police department was called on to start towing cars at churches, arresting people on the lakefront in Chicago. You know, the safest place probably to be is walking on the beach along Lake Michigan.
And right.
The mayor's office was saying, lock these people. I want arrests made, et cetera. So specifically May 26th, so a day after George Floyd incident in Minneapolis, May 26th, there was a protest downtown to open up Chicago. It was a protest against the lockdowns. And we got orders from the mayor's office. Everybody needs to go to jail. All these protesters need to go to jail. They're demanding, you know, freedom. And they're exercising their First Amendment right. And where the police department was at a point, the leadership was like, geez, you know, we're getting orders from the mayor's office. This doesn't seem right to us. This is, well, eventually, prior to this group, anyone being placed in handcuffs, we just had a discussion with them and say, hey, this is the pressure we're in from City Hall. They eventually just left. Fast forward 2 days later, and the first
the protesters protest left. The protest dispersed.
The First Amendment protesters who were demanding their right to, you know, you got First Amendment. All I want to do is worship in my church. All I want to do is I want to protest the lockdowns and the orders from City Hall. Lock up everybody. And if we had that tool, it's the flock tool. Then it certainly would have made efficiency of rounding people up a lot easier. And then, you know, you like to give that administration the benefit of the doubt. They're trying to save lives, et cetera. But fast forward, it was only 3 days later that the first huge protest in Chicago referenced George Floyd came in. And the direction from City Hall, hey, we got to give everybody space. Got to give them space to protest. Very mismanaged protest, which turned into days and days of rioting, death, destruction, 70 buildings burned down. So, and that was when it really just exposed, like, wow, this mayor, this has nothing to do with COVID. This is control.
Yeah.
And handing somebody like that this flock tool is scary. So I know that the Pensacola Police Department, we have strong accountability system in place. We're, you know, if somebody abuses this, I would certainly hold them accountable. I have a lot of trust in my officers. They do a great job. But I don't know somebody who's sitting, you know, in Chicago accessing my cameras. I don't know if they have the same mindset, the same views of the Constitution as I do. So I think a legislative fix is needed. And that's what pushed me over the edge. Seems everybody else can speak for themselves, I guess.
And you know, I thought it was interesting that in all of the press releases that came out yesterday from Sheriff Bob Johnson, Sheriff Chip Simmons, Chief Rick Hawthorne and Gulf Breeze, and from yourself, that there was a pattern, and the pattern was, we think this is a valuable law enforcement tool. We know this is a valuable law enforcement tool. We are in support of the use of it, and we know that it has not been abused by our agency. Nevertheless, we recognize that people are upset. People have questions. And we think that a lot of those questions are fair, and therefore we are asking for guidance, rules, legislation, so that we know when and how they're going to be used, and that they're used, as you've often said, in a way that is accommodated to the people, how they want to be policed in themselves. You know, yesterday, it's interesting, there was a news story that came out that violent crime in the United States dramatically fell again last year, as you and I have talked about before. One of the big reasons why violent crime and ordinary crime, too, is down significantly is because of the technological solutions. And, I mean, license plate readers are absolutely one of those keys. I think that we are now in a position where we're going to get to see what happens to crime in places where we've gotten rid of this key tool. Does it not fall the same as the rest of the country? Does it go back up? We're really going to see some real-time comparison between how crime fighting is affected by this. Do you agree?
I do agree, and I'm not sure that we'll see, you know, a spike in crime, but I guarantee that what we'll see is a decrease in the percentage of solved cases, because mm-hmm. our detectives utilize these for, you know, anything from a shoplifting to all the way up to a murder, and it's a super, super valuable, effective tool in that. I'm not denying that at all. It really is. So whether or not emboldens criminals and increases the level of crime, I don't know, but I will guarantee that unfortunately you will see a drop in the clearance rate.
And I hope, I assume that you track that to a degree already, so you'll be able to show the data of how clearance rates are changing or have changed because of this. And I didn't mean necessarily that, you know, the criminal was brooding at home waiting for the day that flock cameras didn't exist to commit his crimes. I more thought that because you close cases more effectively and quickly, you incapacitate criminals by catching them and putting them in jail, which has a fairly straightforward but somewhat indirect effect on crime rates. That's the one that I was thinking of.
No, yep, very, very true. And I think, this is, I would describe this as a win for criminals, unfortunately. Yeah. It's a balance.
I said that criminals are cheering and totalitarians are crying, you know,
that's exactly right.
So Chip asked me a very interesting question yesterday, and I did not have a good answer for him at the time, which was, well, what do you want to see? Like, what would make you comfortable with it? And of course, now, you know, the governor has said the legislature should take this up. All the agencies are saying that. We know from the Senate pro tem incoming that they're going to take this up. The couple that have been suggested or that I have suggested, one was, if the database could be searched only through warrants would be one possible consideration. Another would be felonies only, no misdemeanors. Another would be the time that the data is collected. If you're not on a list of approved license plates to look for, like a no-fly list kind of comparison, your license plate information is either kept not at all, kept only for, say, a half hour or 2 hours or 3 hours. I want to be able to protect the kidnapped kids and, you know, the exigent circumstances. I just don't want it to be stored much longer than that. So you're a cop. You use this. You're, you know, within the parameters of the Constitution, you want to use it effectively. What do you suggest? If you could talk to the legislators, what do you want to see?
Well, the same accountability system I would say that we have I know I can watch the officers in Pensacola. I can hold them accountable, et cetera. But I don't know when an officer in Albuquerque punches in, a license plate because I'm looking for a murderer. Are you really looking for a murderer? I have no idea. You know, there's how many thousands of agencies across the country. So I can only hold my own officers accountable. So some legislation which really puts teeth in that, because right now, if somebody's lying to me, if they're doing a search for their, you know, for their girlfriend or whatever, and it pops up a camera in Pensacola and they're out of my jurisdiction, and their chief is like, hey, this is my buddy, and I'll let them go. There's nothing I can do about that. So some standard set, at least across the state of Florida, that we can share statewide, accountability system in place. I think a shorter time frame retention is good. There have been cases where crime is discovered, you know, a day or days later, that it has been very helpful to look back some period of time.
Yeah.
But an overwhelming majority of the value of it is pretty much a real time or an hour or two later.
Okay, so we could get the vast majority of the value currently experienced if we shortened the time of retention to even, say, 3 hours. Is that fair?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and that would still be a very valuable tool.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I like that. And I do want to. I just want to clarify something because I had thought you said previously. Correct me if I'm wrong. That you personally were the gatekeeper for all of the information of the local flock cameras within the city limits of Pensacola. That they all basically came through you or possibly one other designated person. So the Albuquerque cop looking at our cameras to ping a license plate would still depend on you approving the look. Am I right or wrong about that?
Yes. However, once we set up our system and said, all right, how are we going to do this properly? As you investigate, when you get the flock system, fast forward 2 months, your detectives have already requested plate lookups in counties, nearby counties, going further and further. We may ourselves have requested flock lookups from, 500 agencies across the country. When you make that request, agencies are like, oh, okay, you want to use our cameras? Well, we too would like to use your cameras. I think it's a fair thing to ask. And that's kind of how the whole system works. Like, all right, we're all in this together, right, law enforcement? Yep.
Okay, so there is a jurisdictional reciprocity in practice, and so the kind of I'm going to personally approve your access to this case and this request is not quite right.
Well, I mean that is specifically what happens, but if you want another agency to play ball with you,
I see.
I mean, why would Albuquerque say like, oh yeah, sure, you can look at all our, when they're like, hey, we sure would like access to yours too, but no, because we don't trust you, we don't know you. Well, we don't trust you either. You're not going to use ours then. Well, hold on.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, and that makes sense to me as well. Any other things? Because as like I said, the felony misdemeanor, the level of the crime, I think of exigent circumstances. Does any of that stuff make sense to you? Or are there any other parameters?
I think the level of crime is good. I think felonies an appropriate thing. I think the big thing maybe is just because there's so much misinformation out there. There's been so much misinformation for this whole conversation of what flock is and what it does. I think getting the buy-in and the communication from the whole state, say, hey, this is actually what they do. Hey, state of Florida, is that something you want? I mean, if I'm a parent, like if one of my kids went missing, I would really want there to be flock available. Is that something? Or do you value your privacy more? And I think if we just have this open and honest conversation, we can hear how people want to be policed, put it down on paper, and then, move forward from there.
And just one thing before we end the conversation, I just wanted to clarify, only because I know people are going to ask. D.C., your boss, the mayor, has been taking an enormous amount of heat over this, even though he didn't. It was kind of original and came before you as well from prior administration on some of this stuff. Not like under Grover, but I mean under the previous police chiefs. I assume that you didn't make this decision without talking to the mayor about this, that the mayor was on board with this, that you guys are in agreement about this decision.
I did not get any pushback from the mayor. The mayor has not pushed me at all. The best mayor as far as policing best mayor period I've ever worked for, but wants an expert to run the police department who knows about policing, defers to me on policing issues. If there's a political issue, yes, of course I want to discuss it. But I think if I told him, hey, mayor, this is the most important thing in the world, I mean, we need to keep flock, he would be like, all right, well, let's fight this fight. But my advice yesterday, or my direction to the department yesterday, didn't have any pushback whatsoever. Yeah, this is, he's kind of owned this in the media, at least, and, city council comment time, everybody's blaming the mayor. The mayor probably had no idea.
It'd be so controversial, right?
Anybody else. This is a police department guy that's saying, hey, mayor, we think we need this tool. It wasn't that much money. I think it was like $50,000 when the money got appropriated.
And it probably came to him from, prior BPD.
And I would have probably done the same thing. No offense to Eric Randall. I think so this is an amazing tool, and let's try it out.
Yeah, and if you're a mayor who wants to be in pro law enforcement, you generally say yes to something like this because, as you say, it hadn't even been a big hubbub conversation at the time. By the way, I know we didn't have time to talk about it, but I really appreciated your comments about the artificial intelligence-generated child sexual abuse material, CSAM, and that Seventh Circuit Court ruling. Horrific ruling, terrible ruling. There should be no protections for anybody using any kind of imagery involving children in these ways, regardless of whether it's, and your comment about how they have to feed the AI in order to, you know, the actual photos in order to get them to generate the false ones. I just thought that was all on point. So Eric Winstrom, as always, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for spending it with us today. Thanks for the clarification, explaining things and keeping us safe, man. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate you.
And, you know, I said this yesterday. I'll say it again. I really do. I genuinely appreciate the willingness of Sheriff Johnson, Sheriff Simmons, Chief Winstrom to engage in these conversations with me. And, you know, I know Rick Hawthorne, you know, Chief Hawthorne, I've actually talked with him, you know, all the time or, you know, when necessary. He would be as well. And I love that. I love that our law enforcement leaders are open, willing even to change their mind. As I said yesterday, and I'll just say it again. Some people have this view that when people, you know, elected leaders or anybody else change their mind, that that's something that like gotcha them over, you know, that's a flip flop. Well, okay. I mean, it could be, you know, but it also could be that they got new information, new perspective, something persuaded them to change their mind. And, you know, as a teacher of philosophy, I always think that the most important thing for anybody to engage in a conversation with other folks, you know, the reason we have free speech is not just so you can have your say, but so you can change a mind and persuade somebody. And that requires other people to be willing to be persuaded and changed. And, you know, I think a lot of these folks were, you know, they love the ability of flock cameras to solve crimes. They have been listening to what people have been saying, and they have their own concerns that they brought to the table. And, you know, especially with what the governor decided on Monday, you know, they have changed their conclusion. And that, to me, that's not a flip-flop or what some, I'm sure some clever, semi-clever, is a flip-flock. No, that's what you want people to do. You want them to listen and change their mind when appropriate. That's praiseworthy, not criticism worthy, at least in my opinion. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Whatever the day, whatever the hour, FPL is working to keep your service reliable and your bills as low as possible by building stronger lines and rerouting power with our self-healing grid, by preparing for storms and restoring service quickly, and by building highly efficient, diverse energy sources. Because we know every dollar counts. FPL, working for you every single day.
For almost two decades, Bella Magazine has been celebrating the women of the greater Pensacola community. The tradition continues as Bella Magazine brings print to radio every month on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Tune in today at 9 to hear latest health and wellness, philanthropy, stories on local businesses and women, fashion and beauty, home and garden, food and wine, travel stories, and more. That's the Bella Magazine Show, today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekdays 2 till 4, right after Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
You know, in my line of work, you got to be able either to sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic or Dixie with equal enthusiasm, depending upon present company.
I'm all right, nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight?
Good morning, 5:58 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Well, interesting interaction in Congress, where Congress had a vote at the request of Mike Johnson to create a constitutional amendment. Of course, the House or the Senate does not have the ability to directly do that. They have the ability to give it to the states in the interest of the states then deciding to create a constitutional amendment. What was the constitutional amendment that they tried to get passed and failed to get passed? to set the size of the Supreme Court at 9 justices. You remember there's been this long-standing argument from the Democrats that going all the way back to, who became Merrick Garland? Merrick Garland getting thwarted by Mitch McConnell in what was really wrong by Mitch to do. It was inappropriate. Nevertheless, it produced an outcome I like, which got me better justices than Merrick Garland on the court. But here we are. Well, they say that the court skews to the right because of what the Republicans did wrong, and they're right about that. But it has produced a lot of, they would say terrible, I would say good, conclusions and consequences on the Supreme Court. And so what they have long threatened or asked the question of is, well, can we just pack the court and fix this problem? You know, can we expand the size of the court to, say, 15 under a Democratic president? So the response from the Republicans yesterday was, well, let's have a vote. Let's create a constitutional amendment to set it at 9, which it's been for like 130 or 40 years. And that passed, but it did not pass with a 2/3, and therefore it failed. So we're not going to have that vote because the Democrats want to keep open the possibility of expanding the court.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most.